Sorry to interrupt, but this call is now being recorded.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Eagle's Wings Conference with your host, Dr. Robert Stearns, Executive Director of Eagle's Wings. Dr. Stearns, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. God bless you, everyone. It's wonderful to be on this call today, and I want to thank everyone for taking their time to join us today. We have, so far, approximately 500 people who've called in from across the nation in response to this urgent moment that Israel is facing, and we want to thank hundreds of you for being on the call, and we want to ask you in advance to take the information that you receive on this call and begin to broadcast it through websites, Facebook, Twitter. Where we leave a vacuum, something will fill that vacuum, and so it's necessary that we really lift our voice and get clear information into the public stream, and that's why we've asked you to be on the call today. We're really honored to have with us our good friend, Minister Yuli Edelstein. He is the Minister of Public Affairs and the Diaspora for the State of Israel. He's a cabinet member for the State of Israel. And Minister Edelstein has a long history of serving the State of Israel, was born in Ukraine, has served under Prime Minister Netanyahu in a number of positions, and currently serves, as I said, as Minister of Public Affairs and the Diaspora. He's a household name in Israel and is known around the world for his visionary leadership. And Minister Edelstein, thank you for taking your time to be with us today. You have about 500 or more Christians on the call who strongly love Israel and the Jewish people, and who understand that the kind of force that comes against Israel and the Jewish people is too often not based at all on fact, but just on blind hatred. And we would love to hear from you the facts of what's happening right now, and then encouragement in how we can help be a shield of truth on behalf of Israel. So, Mr. Edelstein, if you'll take it from here.
Thank you so much, Dr. Stearns, and hello to all those who registered for the call. I'm very impressed by the numbers and by the fact that you're taking time from your, I'm sure, busy schedules to learn more about the facts, about probably things that we don't hear on the TV, about what happened in our country a couple of days ago and what is developing right now. In general, before I start talking about the situation, I would like to use this opportunity to express my admiration for everything you are doing on a daily basis, not necessarily in the moment of a certain crisis, all your projects, the well-known prayer for the peace of Jerusalem, your Israel experience activities, college scholarships. I think that all these things encourage us and prove to us that we have more friends around the world than one might think when listening to a TV program or a radio show, and people understand the truth, understand that Israel is the promised land, is the only flourishing democracy in our area, and when it has to defend itself, it's doing so by sticking to all the moral obligations and to the vision that we inherited from the days of the Bible. Now we'll go to what happened 3 days ago. I have to say that for me personally, the thing was unfolding in pretty unusual circumstances. I was accompanying Prime Minister Netanyahu on his state visit to Canada, and we both were kind of brutally taken out of our beds at about 2 a.m. Night between Monday and night between Sunday and Monday, and the Prime Minister started getting reports about what happened. The reports were very controversial in the beginning. It took some time to get control of things and to understand firsthand what happened from the Defense Minister, from the chiefs of different intelligence agencies. And when the picture became clearer, the facts are as follows. We definitely had known about this attempt, about that organized provocation of a number of people, 600-something people, to try to break the blockade, what they call the siege of the Gaza Strip. I would just mention at this stage that knowing that things could develop in the wrong direction, we had turned to the Turkish government officially and non-officially in order to suggest that if it's about bringing humanitarian aid to the Gaza Strip, A, there is no shortage of basic supplies, of basic goods in the Gaza Strip. But if it's so necessary for the organizers to make this kind of a statement, we were prepared to take all the merchandise to the port of Ashdod and after inspection move it straight to Gaza, to the residents of Gaza. As you can imagine, the Turkish government ignored our suggestion, and the organizers themselves said loud and clear, and I quote one of the organizers, a lady by the name of, if I'm not mistaken, Greta Berlin, who said on May 27, this is not about humanitarian aid to Gaza, this is about breaking the Israeli siege. Organizers behaved in accordance with that statement, and at the same time, it's important to stress that there were six ships. On five out of six, well, there was violence. Israeli soldiers didn't get heroes' welcome there, you can imagine, but the level of violence was such, and the organized effort to attack soldiers was at that level that the Israelis, our soldiers, could cope with it without using weapons, without having to shoot. And five out of six ships were taken to the port of Ashdod without any extra violence, shall we say. On the sixth ship, our soldiers were met, as you could all see on the pictures distributed by the IDF, by the government of Israel. They were met by an organized group of dozens of people, most of them former Turkish military, armed with clubs, metal rods, knives, axes, and even electric saw, who were trying to brutally attack the soldiers. After a couple of minutes, when it became clear that the soldiers were in danger, some of them had to shoot. We unfortunately have several soldiers wounded, one of them still in critical condition in one of the Israeli hospitals. And we have, and I would add unfortunately in this case too, nine of the organizers of that flotilla dead. I think that these facts teach us two things. A, we as the government, especially we as the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, will have to check thoroughly what exactly happened and how to avoid incidents of that kind in the future. And the future is coming. As you know, there are already a couple of ships on the way. I guess Hamas leaders and those among the organizers, I would specifically name an organization called IHH, an organization based in Turkey, posing as a charity organization, in reality being an organization with close ties to World Jihad and Al-Qaeda. I'm saying these things on the basis of reports we got, not necessarily from Israeli sources, but from European sources too, and the information we have about the attitude of the Turkish government of that organization. So I guess the organizers, the Hamas and IHH and their like, really enjoyed what happened. For them, loss of lives and the whole noise around this story is, I guess, a reason for celebration, as opposed to our normal human reaction in Israel, where we express sorrow about what happened. So we'll have to check ourselves. We'll have to see how we operate without casualties or with minimal casualties next time. And at the same time, I want to say loud and clear that there is no possibility and no chance that Israel will allow uninspected goods into the Gaza Strip for a very simple reason. It's our obligation to protect the Israeli citizens. It's even, I would say, our obligation to protect innocent Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And the moment Hamas gets free access to weapons, and there is no doubt if there will be free influx of things, of goods, into the Gaza Strip, unfortunately, most of the things that will reach Gaza won't be toys and food and medicine. It will be weapons and ammunition for the Hamas. Hamas inevitably will use it to start a new round of violence in the area. Israel will have to react. Innocent Israelis will suffer. Innocent Palestinians will suffer. This is exactly the reason we have the blockade. If there will be at some stage some kind of international mechanism to inspect all the goods, the one that could be reliable, the one Israel can rely on, as opposed, for example, to what happened in the north, in southern Lebanon, you know, where after what we referred to as the Second Lebanon War, there was a UN resolution, there are peacekeeping forces of the UN, there are observers, there is a kind of mechanism that is just not working. And Hezbollah, as we all know, one of the most dangerous organizations, terrorist organizations in the world, is getting weapons on a regular basis, including most modern equipment you can imagine, state-of-the-art weapons. So this is something that we wouldn't afford and can't afford in our south, in the Gaza Strip namely. Hence, the Prime Minister said yesterday loud and clear, and I am saying to you loud and clear, if there will be another attempt this week, next week, in 2 weeks from now, we will have to act. We will do everything in our power to avoid casualties, but we will nevertheless prevent influx of uninspected goods into the Gaza Strip. Now, the consequences and the results. We all know that on the international level, there were all kinds of statements based, I would say, on this classical approach of brutal Israeli soldiers, inverted commas, attacking peace activists. I, first of all, have a very different idea of peace activists. I usually don't imagine them armed with clubs and knives and axes attacking people. But nevertheless, there were statements coming from many countries. I would say that still the public opinion, the objective viewers and listeners today, after our effort in terms of the presenting the real picture, started, I hope, influencing a little bit. I would say that the picture, at least in the minds of many, is a little bit more objective, or shall we say, a little bit more complex than that initial report. And I just hope and pray that more people, starting with government leaders and officials and just viewers and listeners and internet users all over the world, will understand that basically the reason for that operation was not to brutally attack someone, but on the contrary, to maintain stability in the area, to deny Hamas access to weapons, and to save lives of innocent Israelis and Palestinians. We hear still militant statements coming from Turkey, which is very unfortunate. Turkey called back its ambassador from Jerusalem back to Ankara. Israel, in a very unusual move, normally in the diplomatic world, it's nearly automatic that when a country calls its ambassador back, the counterpart immediately does the same. Israel decided not to return its ambassador to Ankara, I mean from Ankara to Jerusalem, and we understand the importance of relations with Turkey. We hope that things will calm down a little bit and Turkey will behave as a civilized country, a country belonging to the family of democracies around the world, and not siding with regimes like that of like those of Iran and Syria. I hope that here in the United States we are finding understanding, and still we have a lot of work to do. No one is fond of Hamas. Thank God Hamas is neither American administration's darling nor the European Union's darling. But at the same time, we have to act in order to prevent pressure and to prevent or avoid the situation in which, because of the accident and because of what happened, there will be attempts to pressure Israel to just lift the blockade and to allow things moving into Gaza. I already explained at least twice that the results could be really lethal for everything happening in our area. So I will stop right here. I will say thank you again to all those listening to me right now. And Robert, if some of you yourself or some of the participants have questions, I'll be more than eager to try to answer them.
Thank you, Minister Edelstein. This has been an excellent overview of the situation. We appreciate it very much. And we do now have upwards well over 500 people on the call, and we appreciate you giving us this briefing. I want to reflect back briefly to you what we've heard. First of all, that on a daily basis, there is humanitarian aid that flows into Gaza apart from this situation. I think the number that we had heard, I believe we heard from Danny Aiello's office that upwards of 15,000 tons flows into Gaza on a weekly basis of humanitarian aid. So the idea that it had not been arriving there on a regular basis is not the case. Then I think we heard you say that you had communicated back to Turkey that if there was an interest in getting these goods in, that this could come in through the port of Ashdod after a review of what was going to be sent in to make sure that there would not be the kinds of materials that would be going to Hamas for their ends. But the organizers said clearly that this is not about aid reaching Gaza, it's about the free flow of breaking the blockade. And of course, in breaking the blockade, there is no way then to monitor what it is that is going in and strengthening Gaza's position. And you've said very clearly that Israel will not allow an unaccountable flow of goods into Gaza that can be used to strengthen Hamas's position. And so these are excellent points for us to understand and focus on. As you say, we need to prepare that this type of provocative behavior, unfortunately, may continue and increase. So we want to open this. Is that a good summary, Minister Edelstein, of your comments and any further clarification you'd want to make there?
Robert, it's a wonderful summary of my comments, and I would thank you for reminding me that I didn't mention just the figures that you've just mentioned. All the six ships were carrying about 10 tons of supplies for the Gaza Strip, which is less than, much less, as you rightly mentioned, than we supply on a weekly basis to Gaza from Israel. And the specific goods on these ships after inspection were moved to the Gaza Strip. We didn't have any intention to arrest them or confiscate them or anything of the kind. And last time I checked, Hamas, I know it sounds like a sad joke, but last time I checked, Hamas was not allowing these goods into the Gaza Strip, and they were stuck at the Karmi checkpoint at the border of Gaza. So we all can learn from that an additional time, there is no real shortage. It's about PR campaigns sometimes on the back of innocent citizens in the Gaza Strip. By the way, just to add another point here, Robert, as I guess all of our listeners right now, all our participants right now know, Israel decided not to put to trial the people who were on the ships. Rather, they deported them from Israel. Most of them are already out. And I would just, without drawing any comparison, would like to each of us to try to imagine what would happen to you, to me, or to anyone else if we would try to illegally enter a certain country without having proper visas and proper IDs and by force to cross the borders. I guess that we wouldn't find ourselves back home in a couple of days.
Yeah, an excellent point. Mr. Edelstein has a very intense schedule managing all that's happening in these days, but he's graciously agreed to take some questions. So we're going to open this up for questions. The operator will help us with this, but if you have a question, you're on the call and you have a question. If you'll hit #1, that will begin to queue you up for question, and then the operator will let you know that your line has been unmuted, and that is your cue to go ahead and ask your question. So, operator, if you'd begin to open the line, we'll hopefully be able to take three or four questions while we have Minister Edelstein on the line.
Great. And as was said, you'll know when it's your turn to ask your question. You'll hear yourself unmuted by the system. So I will unmute our first caller for their question. Go ahead.
Yes, Minister Edelstein, this is Jay Stewart calling from North Carolina. First of all, I want to thank you so much for your time and for the information that you've given to us. And I just wanted to ask how realistic it is that the UN Security Council has demanded that the blockade be removed.
That what will be removed?
That
the blockade will be removed. Well, there are demands like that all the time. I personally met under totally different circumstances. It was actually the International Holocaust Memorial Day in the UN, and I met on the eve of that day with Secretary General Ban Ki-moon here in New York. It was late January this year, and one of the first issues he raised with me was the issue of Gaza and this whole theory about people suffering from shortage of no goods. I explained to him the real situation. This is not a new demand, and I will say very honestly, we would love to have the situation when the world wouldn't be pushing us for like continuing the responsibility or continuing the control, even I would say, of the Gaza Strip. As we all remember, 5 years ago, in a move that was very controversial, and I personally was not among the supporters of that move, but Israel withdrew all the Jewish population, all the Jewish communities out of the Gaza Strip. And that point, those who were supportive of that hoped that that would be something that will kind of change the position of the world, and that we would be able to feel free of all those responsibilities, and the people of Gaza will take care of themselves, and Egypt and Saudis and other countries will finally interfere and help in terms of the economic development. In the meantime, as you all see, opposite things are happening. We would be happy to remove the blockade the moment we will make sure that things coming in are foods, medicine, toys, you name it, building materials, and not Hamas-oriented goods, namely weapons and ammunition.
Thank you very much.
We have time for a few more questions. If you have a question, hit #1. Your cue that you are up for a question is that it will come on your line that say that your line is unmuted. Please just give us your name and where you're from, and then state your question for Minister Edelstein.
Okay, our next question, one moment. Opening the line for the next question.
Hello, this is Mike Bickle from Kansas City.
Yes, I'm with you.
With all the others on the line, we want to thank you for the thorough and responsible information that you gave us. It's so helpful. And we want you to know that you have many, many friends across America and many other places, and we just wanted to say that to you. What can we do practically to support and help you?
I think that, first of all, thank you for thanking me, but you really don't have to. And I think that, first of all, what you're doing on a daily basis is already great encouragement and great support. In this specific situation, I think that bringing the information further, the way Dr. Stearns just suggested several minutes ago, distributing the information, probably talking to your elected officials locally and nationally, explaining the facts and knowing, and I'm sure you know it, and I promise you that things that I'm talking about, all the points I'm talking about in this conversation, are the reality, are the truth. It's not just, you know, about our view and the other side's view. These are the same things that really happened. Unfortunately, we hear a lot of lies, and if people like you will help us to deliver the message, to distribute the message, so to say, I think it will be of great help, especially those who are, those of you, and there are many I know, who are in the position of talking, as I've said, to elected officials, to influential, probably media people, this would be great help. And on a personal note, I would say that by the same token, I know you're coming to Israel many times. During those challenging times, the more people will come, the more people will tour the country, express solidarity, meet Israelis, the more, the better the mood in our country will be.
One more thing I'd like to say is that because Robert, Dr. Stearns has so much influence with leaders in America, if he would write a kind of a little press release type sort of thing that we could all say, and that you could even edit it and verify that that's what you once said. I know there's millions that are listening to Robert and following his leadership and his inspiration in this. If you would give that to us, that would be a practical tool so that we could be assured that we're saying the things that are helpful.
I'm sure that, I don't know what Dr. Stern's plans are right now, but I'm sure that after we take a couple of more questions, probably he would stay on the call and talk to you about things that in practically you as human beings and friends and you as an organization could do in order to express your support that I know we have in practical terms.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mike, from Kansas City. And Mike, thank you for the incredible work you're doing there, especially at the IHOP base there, to just cultivate a heart for Israel in the nations and specifically with the next generation. We'll take time for about two more questions. And so if the operator will go ahead and open up the next line for the next question, please.
Okay, opening up for the next question.
California.
I'm sorry, we're hearing you, but too quietly. If you could repeat that louder, please.
Hi, this is Tari Roberts from Los Angeles, California, and it's a blessing again to get this report. I had a quick question, and it's somewhat technical. I noticed as the – are we hearing me okay?
Yes, thank you, Pastor Roberts.
Fine, yes.
I noticed that in the media reports, they are emphasizing the fact that the engagement took place in international waterways, as if they're really trying to use that to draw some sort of a line of offense or a line of challenge. I'm assuming that, you know, if I knew a torpedo was being fired from another country and coming here to threaten myself, I would try to intercept that as early as possible. So I guess my question is, how can I communicate to my community? I pastor here in Hollywood and have a lot of media people there who are influential. And but I just want to, I saw that was somewhat of a technicality that I saw the media trying to highlight, and how can I address the fact that it was wisdom and legal and right for us to engage in what the media is calling international waterways?
Excellent question.
Excellent question. I can echo Robert saying that it's an excellent question, because we've heard a lot about the violation of law by the Israeli Navy. The facts are that according to, I will even exactly give you the number, paragraph 67A of international law dealing with sea arrangement, Israel could act in international waters to effectively impose the blockade. And so in terms of the just legalities, there is no problem. But I will share with you that we could probably intercept the ships closer to the Gaza Strip, not in the international waters. It could cause, I will very honestly say, could cause more casualties. How come? We were afraid that Hamas would organize a kind of a flotilla of little boats, fishermen boats and things of that kind from Gaza towards the six ships coming. In this kind of a mess, Israeli soldiers could have to act with more force, to use more force, and as I unfortunately said, casualties could be even more than we witnessed. So the decision was a calculated decision to try to intercept the ships away from the Gaza shores, further from the coast of Gaza. And it's also important to mention here that the interception didn't start with, as some are trying to present, an Israeli attack on the ships in the international waters. The interception started with the loudspeaker calls in real time by
right.
the commander of the force to escort the ships to Ashdod. They were informed that the Israeli army was there not to attack them. It was a kind of a, as they call it, the police mission of escorting the ships to Ashdod for inspection. And further developments are already known to you, and I addressed them in our conversation.
Excellent. That's perfect.
Thank you, Pastor Roberts. We'll take time for one more question. So if the operator opens your line, please just state your name, where you're from, and your question.
Opening the line for the next question.
Hi, this is Linda Welker from Florida. And my question concerns the U.S. relations with Israel, and I think everyone on the phone here is very concerned about that. And one of the things that I read was that President Obama had said he stressed the need for a credible investigation of the incident. And I just wanted to know, from your perspective, would Israel be open to some type of investigation? And what kind of credible investigation do you think he's talking about?
Well, first of all, Linda, thank you for the question. As you understand, as you can easily imagine, for us, the U.S.-Israel relations are very important. It's not about this or that specific administration. It's about long-term relations between allies and friends. And in this specific situation, I would say that I can notice on a positive note that there was a statement by Vice President Biden that Israel has a right to defend itself, which is, I know it sounds like motherhood and apple pie, but these days I think it's still important to stress it. Practically, first and foremost, and I addressed it honestly, IDF is checking right now as we speak what exactly happened, what the exact developments were time-wise, force-wise, activity-wise. This is the first and the most important thing. In terms of some kind of investigation into the general matter, I think that there are different opinions. I will honestly tell you that we still don't have like an authorized decision how to proceed here. It could be Israeli team, say, with the Supreme Judge or ex Supreme Court judge coordinating a team of people that could investigate all the developments. There is a demand for international committee. I will honestly tell you that, A, I don't understand why in a country like Israel with free press and democratic process where nothing could be hidden, we need an external international committee to come and investigate us. But except for that, I think that we all just had that experience with the so-called Goldstone Committee checking Operation Cast Lead. And, you know, to have a situation in which a committee headed by an apartheid judge who was sending black people to death in South Africa just 20 years ago, and with four other participants, three out of four had expressed before joining the committee their views about Israel, in which Israel is an ultimate evil and aggressor and you name it. I think that this kind of experience teaches us that even when there is pressure and even when there are UN decisions and even if some friendly countries call for this kind of investigation, Israel should better think twice before agreeing to any kind of a committee like that and cooperating with it.
Excellent. Minister Edelstein, thank you so much for your time. I want to say for those on the call a few points. This call, as was announced at the beginning, has been recorded, and the recording, if I understand correctly, an operator, correct me if I'm wrong, but both the recording of this call and a transcript of this call will be able to be made available to you at your request for you to forward on and for you to have that information to disseminate to your churches and prayer groups and networks. Likewise, we are preparing an email for you that has the talking points that Mike Bickle referenced earlier. It will clearly state the facts of the situation so that you can be armed with the truth. And really, in this day and age, it's all about Facebook. It's all about blogs. It's all about getting those comments posted online. And then it's about calling our elected officials. As I've cultivated relationships with our elected officials over these past few years, it's been amazing to me how open they are to receiving input and perspective from their constituency. And so the power of simply making a phone call to your congressman, to your senators, and then writing a letter to the editor, to your local paper. When these letters to the editor get in print and provide this perspective, I think it really becomes vital. So you should all have in your inbox within the hour or two the follow-up from this with the ability to get the recording, the transcript, and as well as the talking points that we have that have been made available with the facts of what's been on the call. And now is the time for us to take the trumpet, the shofar that God has put in our hands, and to blow it loudly. Now is the time for us to lift our voice on Zion's behalf and to speak out clearly. And so we just ask you to do that. Minister Edelstein, if you're still on the call, do you have any final perspective or comment to add before we dismiss?
Just first of all, I still am, and I will apologize because I really have to run to the next meeting. And Dr. Stearns, and to all the 500-plus people, really, I don't want to say thank you because you're doing the most natural thing, and you aren't doing it to please me or anyone in Israel. So I just want to express again my admiration for everything you are doing, and to tell you first person singular that your friendship and support and your efforts are really very important to us. So thanks again.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very, very much. Thank you, everyone who's been on the call. And again, you'll be looking for that email soon. God bless you. Thank you for your time, and bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you for your participation. You may now drop from the call.